This is Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
How much money do you have saved? I read a startling statistic this week that 10 years ago, if you looked at savings as a proportion of your income, you were on average likely to have around 10% in savings. So if you earned 60 grand a year, you were likely to have about $6,000 in savings tucked away. But today, the savings income equation would be more like earn 60 grand a year, you might have about $600 saved. So our savings as a proportion of what we earn is much less than even a decade ago. One of the reasons, so say the politicians, the finance and economists types that you see on the news, one of the reasons they give is wage stagnation. Sounds like a stinky, fetid description, doesn't it, to describe that the money we earn that helps us live our lives. But basically, our wages, your wages, not going up. And so, we're digging into our savings to maintain our lives. Focus today, we're going to dive into that stagnant pool and try to find out why. Is it actually a problem? And if it is, how do we get wages back on the up and up? And from you today, to help inform our discussion on Focus, are your wages flat? Are they stagnant? Have you had to use your savings to pay for things that would normally come out of the weekly or fortnightly pay packet? The number for you to share what you can from your personal story, 1300 222 612, to text 0467 922 612. And hey, when was the last time you felt able to ask for a pay rise?
Emma Griffiths, Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Jean Tunney is Director of Adept Economics. Dan Petrie is from the Chamber of Commerce and Industry Queensland. Craig Emerson is an economist and a former cabinet minister under the Gillard government. Di Johnson is a lecturer in finance from Griffith University. And Ros McLennan is General Secretary from the Queensland Council of Trade Unions. So, wow, with this panel, we must be able to save the world's problems, right? Solve them and save people. Now, Di Johnson, We keep hearing from people that wages are stagnant.
Yep.
Does sound stinky and fetid. What are the stats around that?
Well, you're right. Wages have stagnated. But I always find it with anything, whether it's economic growth, savings, unemployment, I always think it's more helpful to dig down into what that means for different types of households, different age groups, whether it's single parent households and different industries. So, when we have a look at, yes, growth is up and a lot of our gross domestic product or economic growth is fueled by consumer spending. And so, which has still gone up, which is a little bit surprising, but nonetheless, when we then have a look at, well, what potentially fuels that for different groups of people, for a large portion, it will be their wages usually, but at the moment they're dipping into their savings to fuel that consumption.
Okay. Well, when we look at flat wages, perhaps Jean Tunney, I don't know, maybe you could give us stats around when was the last time wages were actually on the up?
Well, in nominal terms, so just in dollar terms, the wages are increasing, but it's not enough to compensate for inflation, so the general increase in prices that you see. So we've had wages growth of around 2% and a bit,
or 2.1%,
you know, sometimes a bit under. And the CPI is about 2% and a bit as well. So it's in the low twos or so. In real terms, for the last couple of years, they've been flat. So we haven't had a real increase in our purchasing power. But that comes after a long period where we had very strong wages growth or strong growth in real wages over the late 2000s.
Okay, so Craig Emerson, somebody who was in government with Labor over the last decade or so, you've been there watching the economy quite closely. When you look at stagnant wages now, and I keep using that tone of voice, but why do you think it's happening?
Well, there's a lot of so-called slack in the labour market. Now, slack is not just unemployment. The unemployment rate is still above 5%, which is a bit on the high side, but it's been a lot higher in, you know, decades past and so on, and it's been lower in decades past, but it's a bit on the high side. But what's hidden is underemployment. There's 700,000 unemployed people. These are people who are actively looking for work. There's another 1.1 million people who are underemployed. What do we mean by that? We mean people who are working casual or part-time and are actively looking for more hours of work but can't get them.
And why can't they get them?
Well, there's just not enough work around, basically, and that's okay. Why I describe it as slack in the labour market.
Dan Petrie. Most
people just look at the unemployment rate and they go, oh, wow, you know, that's pretty close to full employment. Well, it's not. And even if it were, it's only part of the story. The underemployment rate is higher now than at any time going way back even to the 1991 recession. You know, when people talk about 27 years of economic growth, well, the underemployment rate is greater than 27 years ago.
And so when was the last time, have you gone back even further? When was the last time it was like this?
They haven't had this series going okay. You know, for many, many decades, but it is at historic highs.
Okay, so let's go to Dan Petrie, the representative for business groups in Queensland then. Dan, why are people not being able to get the hours they want when the economy is growing?
Well, there's a couple of reasons at the moment. You do have a bit of a crunch on margins. Now, a lot of people love to separate out, you know, like various factors. They'll say electricity prices are high. They'll say that, you know, the cost of doing business, compliance is an issue. Hiring staff can be problematic. Getting the right staff can be problematic. But, you know, it's interesting. Craig Emerson is a former small business minister as well. So he knows acutely some of the challenges in that space. So It's a raft of factors, not just one. So, like, we do have, for example, a bit of a crunch on margins. Cash flow is a bit of an issue. And the other thing, too, for small business, the number one area many struggle with is actually getting a hold of good available finance. And with banks also tightening credit, that's an issue.
Okay. Now, another startling factor in this that I read recently, so it's startling to me, you know, I don't have the basis of information that you guys do. But so the latest recent full-year reporting season for companies. In the year to June, profits hit a record of $335.4 billion, which was up 10%, and wages and salaries rose by 2.1%. So that's a good 8% there that businesses are doing something else with. Yes. They're giving it to shareholders?
Predominantly all they're doing is protecting their existing margins and payouts of shares. That's all they do. There's no real companies into the ASX top 20, for example, that are blowing the lights out. Like the banks, for example.
Blowing the lights out, you mean spending everything?
That's right.
So, but of the companies that reported a dividend, so I've got some stats, 70% lifted the dividend and by 13.6%. So they're paying out shareholders 13.6%. They're paying out staff 2.1%.
But again, the top 20 of the ASX tends to mask like a wider picture.
Okay.
Once you get below that, it's not as generous. But certainly the nation's banks, which enjoy a wonderful reputation at the moment, could
particularly because they're putting up interest rates outside continuously
but
outside
again, all
of
they're
Reserve
doing
Bank
is,
moves.
All they're doing is protecting margin. Like, we're not talking about a growth profile here. Like, if you look at the number of new applications and credit being taken out, it's flat.
Okay.
And that is a problem. So we need to get the banks lending a bit more.
Okay. Ros McLennan, spokesperson here for the worker, as you know, the leader of unions in Queensland here. When you hear those statistics, I can imagine they don't make you happy, but if the businesses are just protecting margins, then they're protecting the jobs they've got and the employees they've got, aren't they?
protecting profits, I'd say. We've got a situation where the economy's growing, business profits are up, labour productivity's up, but workers aren't getting their fair share. So quite simply, Australia needs a pay rise. And the Australian Council of Trade Unions actually conducted research just a month ago that showed that 82% of those surveyed felt that slow wages growth was front of their minds in terms of being an election issue, and 4 out of 5 of those surveyed hadn't got a pay rise in the last year.
And those surveyed were union members?
General community.
Okay, about how many? Can you give us an idea of the survey?
No, I can't.
No. Okay, so with this discussion today, I really need you to inform our discussion, you listening. What can you tell us about your personal experience in terms of what's happened with your wages in the last few years? Have they gone up? When was the last time you felt able to actually ask for a pay rise? And have you had to dig into your savings? Because that does seem to be part of the picture that we're hearing today. Wages are flat, maintaining our lifestyles, we're digging into those savings. The number to guide us on this trip, 1300 222 612, and to text 0467 922 612. This is Focus. I'm Emma Griffiths. Di Johnson from Griffith Uni.
Yes.
You're just champing at the bit.
I was thinking, as I was listening to the other speakers, and I concur with Craig that I agree there is potentially some slack in the market. I mean, that's one of the theories, and that so the real bargaining power then with existing employees might not be as buoyant as we perhaps expect, but I also think there's some influence with the gig economy as well, potentially holding down some pay increases, because there's these outside workers that can be tapped into, and that's sort of a new dynamic. But also, and you know my research interest is in retirees and baby boomers, so we've got, on average, 750 people retiring every day to get that 5.5 million retired over the next 20 years. And so they're potentially leaving higher salaried roles and people coming in with a gap in that salary. And it might just take a couple of salary reviews if you've got, if you're lucky enough to have them, to make that up. But of course, there is perhaps other changes in bargaining power. There's a lot of people in jobs where they've got this non-competitive, because you sort of think if unemployment's low, then get another job if you're not getting paid what you want. But sometimes people have got anti-competition moves. Like, I've got a friend who's a physio who can't just go somewhere else because she's got this clause in her contract saying, well, you can't work within, X kilometres. And so there's other issues that potentially affect wages growth.
Okay. Jean Tunney, I'm wondering from you, as also an economist in Brisbane, should we be worried that wages haven't gone up in a few years?
I think we should be alert rather than alarmed.
Do you have a fridge magnet for that?
But this is an outcome of a market process, of a competitive process in the labour market. And we did see strong wages growth in the late 2000s, well, before the crisis, during that first phase of the mining boom. And then in the second phase of the mining boom in the early 2010s, we had some growth. We had higher than we did now. And so when the Treasury looked at this issue last year, they attributed the slow wages growth in recent years to what Craig Emerson talked about, the slack in the labour market. Completely agree with that. But also to the fact that because we had this big surge or this big push in the past, during that mining boom, there's a bit of catch-up now. So workers did well, 10 years ago, and they probably exceeded what could be justifiable in terms of productivity. And that, therefore, there's a time when it has to plateau for a while, and then eventually it will be where the level is where it needs to be, and then we will see growth again. So that's one of the explanations the Treasury offered.
So, Craig Emerson, is this the wage stagnation that we had to have?
No, it's not. And in fact, measured living standards, and I'll use the kind of official term, real household disposable income per person. Sounds very technical, but it's basically after-tax income. Is about the same now as it was in 2011. So when we talk about, have wages improved, not only haven't wages improved, but incomes in general have been flat. And does this matter? Well, of course it does. It also matters for governments, because we've had now the federal government say, oh, there's a wage rise just around the corner. Well, which corner? Mm-hmm. And all the signs are that there isn't a wage rise just around the corner. They've been saying this for some time.
Well, why does it matter for governments, though, apart from political reasons?
Well, that's a pretty big reason for a government. It means they can get voted out. And
but, I mean, generally, talking about the economy, I mean, I guess I want to keep it at the level where we're talking about the impact on people, you know.
Well, we just heard that survey, didn't we? And that's a really big change. That is, the top issues normally are health and education when people are surveyed. Soaring up the list is people just feeling that they're not getting a wage rise. And it's very frustrating and annoying for them. What does that do then, Emma? You actually answered that question in your introduction. People are dipping into their savings. Now, that can't be a good thing. Put the politics aside. It can't be a good thing that people are dipping into their savings such that, you know, before long, they'll be, you know, they won't have any savings left. And this is a real problem because it's exactly what set us up for the Great Recession of 2009, the savings ratio was negative. People were diving into their savings. They're doing it again.
You're talking about the global financial crisis then, 2009?
Okay. Yeah, well,
which Australia largely escaped, didn't it?
Of 2008, and then that led to the so-called Great Crash of 2009. Now, Australia was insulated itself from that through some good policies and also our links with China. But the point here is it's not good. You know, ask any household, is this a problem? And they'll say yes, because we're delving into our savings. And at the same time, the Australian household debt is 200% of household income.
So now, if you're feeling uncomfortable, there's a good reason why.
Almost the highest in the world. So what happens if interest rates do rise? And they are likely, they're already rising. These people, the ones who are holding a mortgage, are very, very exposed indeed.
Very
and
vulnerable.
And if interest rates continue to rise, they're already depleted or rapidly depleting their savings. Yes, it's a big problem, not just a political one, but a very big problem in terms of the welfare of those people.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. Calls are coming in. The number is 1300 222 612 to discuss your what you can of your personal situation regarding wages and dipping into your savings with our Focus panel today. Briefly to Di Johnson from Griffith Uni before I get to the calls.
Yeah, sure. Well, just to further reinforce that, it's really important that spending continues because GDP is fuelled, you know, over half of it is fuelled by consumer consumption. So without that, and it, once savings are gone, then and that starts dropping, that has a flow-on effect to other things. So
And Dan Petrie from the CCIQ.
I'll just say this unsurprisingly, you know, that we're leaving out who the chief employers are, the small business people. And most of those people are paying workers first before they pay themselves. That's the fact.
I think you'll hear from somebody who can tell you that firsthand in just a moment. To calls now, Warren in Nambour, what did you want to share with us today?
Hey, good on, mate. My wife is a chef in the hospitality industry. Talking to her boss the other day, she was having a whinge that they have so many casual staff on. And his exact comment to her was, it's too hard to sack a permanent. And so he said to Robin, if as a permanent, I have to give you holiday pay, I have to give you X amount of hours, and you know, you have entitlements. As a casual, I don't have to give you holiday pay, I don't have to guarantee how many hours you do. And most importantly, I don't have to give you 3 written warnings and retrain you if you do something wrong and I've got to sack you.
What did she say?
Well, that's it. Because the other side of the story is I run a courier business. I haven't put a price rise in for 4 years and I've got customers telling me I'm too dear. And my standard answer is, why wasn't I too dear 4 years ago? Because other companies are discounting rates. 4 years ago, I had 3 vehicles on the road and 2 drivers plus me. The tax we had done, you know, the last year's tax we had done, I was $8,000 down on income to what I was when I had 3 vehicles on the road. And that's purely because, like one of your gentlemen said in there. I was the lowest paid driver in my company, and I was the owner.
And have you given your other drivers a pay rise?
No, I laid them off. I couldn't keep going.
Oh, no.
Between registration, fuel, wages, having, you know, superannuation, holiday pay, all the rest of that, literally I scaled down from 3 vehicles to 1 vehicle, and my taxable income has dropped by $8,000 a year.
So listening to Warren in Nambour, Ross McLennan from the union, like, has the union movement basically bargained its workers out of full-time employment?
No, not at all. And actually, the levels of inequality and insecure work that we're seeing is directly correlated to the decline in union density. So every single worker in Australia should be concerned about...
What do you mean by union density?
The number of... the proportion of union members as opposed to all workers. So when worker power decreases, you get the kind of outcomes that Warren's talking about. You know, you get zero wages growth. You get more and more people on insecure work. 40% of workers now are on some kind of insecure work.
But it's what Warren's wife's being told and what Warren's experiencing as well as an employer is that it's so expensive to have full-time workers.
No, that's
with
just...
all of the benefits that you get as a full-time worker.
Like legal entitlements by way of benefits.
But you've bargained them. They're only legal because the union movement's negotiated for them.
So when the...
Hang on, Warren, yep.
Just a story that the reason why I decided I'd had enough of having employees, both my blokes were in the union, and I said to my blokes, each vehicle had a fuel card, and I said to the two drivers, put off filling up the vehicle until dinner time and get yourself a pie and a can of Coke on the fuel card. Well, it soon turned out I was buying cigarettes, and one bloke clocked nearly $400 worth of pies and Coke in 1 month.
Geez, I know a dietitian that I'd like to talk to him. Warren, that's nothing to do with being a member of a union, is it?
Well, it gets better. I told them, no, I said a pie and a can of Coke or a cup of coffee and a sandwich, not your grocery list. Next thing I know, I've got the union involved, abusing me for... you know, not looking after my workers. And that was part of the reason why I decided to lay the two workers off and just go back to a single vehicle.
And how's business looking for this financial year then, Warren?
Good.
Okay. That's good to hear.
Well, you know, like, I used to have three registrations, three insurances, three, everything. I used to have a $11,000 a month fuel bill. Now I have a $2,000 a month fuel bill. And I wonder why I'm only $8,000 down on income from when I had a $11,000 a month fuel bill.
All right, Warren, thanks very much for calling. 1300 222 612 is the number. Roz, I think you had more that you wanted to say there.
I guess plenty. The challenge, I guess, and why there's so much pressure on households, I guess, is that, you know, goes back to the unemployment and underemployment question that Craig Emerson spoke about. For the first time ever, less than half of all workers are full-time. You know, that's quite extraordinary, because when you talk about household consumption, as Di did, you know, your housing costs, you can't get those paid, you know, on a part-time rate. You know, your food bill's still the same. Mm. Your, healthcare expenses, you know, still the same. So although household consumption is up, it's being spent on housing, on utilities, on food, on health. It's not being spent in retail, by and large. And that's the challenge. So it's also meant that insecure work is on the up. You know, 40% of workers are now on some kind of insecure work. That's 900,000 Queenslanders. That's heaps. It means that people can't budget. They can't plan for the future. Often they can't get a mortgage. They can't get a loan. You know, This is the real and practical impact on people's lives. What it's about for business is shifting risk. You know, so working people are now, you know, bearing the brunt, you know, of the ebbs and flows of the economy. You know, they are bearing the risk. And also, because they're insecure workers, it means that they don't feel able to speak up and either ask for or organise for a pay rise through fear of either getting the sack or having their hours chopped, as Warren pointed to.
Sorry, Dan Petrie.
Can I just, you know, Ros, in a lot of ways, we actually do want the same things. I mean, like, a lot of the businesses I talk to, and it's not all bad out there. I like, it's a very, the pessimism setting in. We've got a low dollar. Exports are up. There are industries that are doing quite well. To Ros's point, a lot of businesses, a lot of people I speak to, want good employees. We want the same thing. I just think, I sometimes think the messaging, maybe from organised labour and even from the capital side of things, could be better and a bit more coordinated. The fact of the matter is,
Emma, on that point, and we heard Warren say, oh, you can't really have full-time employees because small businesses have to give them 3 written warnings and retrain them when they do something wrong. That is just completely untrue. I'm sorry, it is completely untrue. When I was small business minister, I negotiated a fair dismissal code. If people are taking money out of the till or anything like that, you don't have to give warnings. Okay. And even if their performance
is that right, Dan Petrie, from your point of view? Yeah,
that's right. But the fact is that's a perception. That's
exactly.
That's a historical one, Craig, and you know that. That's
I know it's a bit, but you just talked and I agreed with you. It's still there, and I think it's important for employer groups to inform their members. I'm talking about small business groups, really, and small business members, because that perception is entrenched and people, oh, no, I hear you've got to give 3 written warnings. It is just untrue.
Okay, so better messaging then from
yourself, Dan Petrie. We advise our members on this, on these very issues.
Okay. So, we're halfway through Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. You're with Emma Griffiths and a panel of people who know stuff about why your wages aren't going up. And in the next half hour, we'll get on to why that's a problem and how can we possibly fix it. Could we get to some sort of Hawke-style era of consensus on this panel today? But we need your stories to inform our discussion. 1300 222 612. What can you share about your personal experience in the last few years? Have your wages gone up? Have they gone down? Can you get enough hours? Have you felt brave enough to ask for a pay rise? Or even to have your position made full-time? We need to hear from you on Focus this morning. The number again, 1300 222 612.
Hi, I'm Kat Feeney, and today on Afternoons, Aussie music legend Paul Kelly. Before too long. He won't be making gravy, but he'll be making some sweet music for your Friday afternoon. I'm gonna go. Join me, Kat Feeney, on Afternoons when Paul Kelly plays live in the studio. That's today from 2 on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Don't we love him? And yes, I have high ambitions for the next half hour of discussion here on Focus, okay? You know, just I'm sure you can help us with that, Craig Emerson, as well, since you were working for Bob Hawke. Shane in Durack has called in. Shane, what did you want to tell us today?
God, you guys have opened up a can of worms here.
We like to do that.
Yeah. All right, let's start by saying savings. What savings? Who's got savings?
Yeah, Di's saying, yeah. Who's got savings? So you don't have any savings, Shane?
No, I'm living hand-to-mouth, basically, week to week. Every week, I wait on my wages.
Have you got a job?
Yes, I work casually. I work in a reasonable industry, so there is work there. I can't afford to be in the union because if I paid union fees, that's less money that I have in my pocket.
Union fees are tax deductible.
Yeah, sure, but that's the end of the
year. But he doesn't pay any tax because his income's so low.
Yeah, right. So, Shane, can you give us a broad idea of what sector you're in?
Look, I'm in the transport industry. But what I'm saying is simple. No one's got any savings, and at the end of the day, we're looking at the anomaly with people with casual employment, and most of them are in farmed out by labour hire companies.
They don't pay
anything. They will pay you the award rate. You get no holiday pay. I've got a mate of mine that's in the industry, same industry I'm in. He gets laid off 3 weeks before Christmas, and he doesn't go back to work. He's in the same job all the time. He doesn't go back to work till 4 or 5 weeks after Christmas. Now, he gets no holiday pay. He gets no sick leave. He gets nothing. He can't even get a sandling because he's still employed.
Gosh.
Now, and as for the unions, well, I've actually asked the union for help a couple of times on a several different things. And the union just turns around and says, no, sorry, you're a contractor because I get subcontract wage.
So, Ros McLennan, do the union fees need to be lowered? I mean, do you just need to start waiving them for certain industries? Because, I mean...
The union movement... Sorry to interrupt you, Amber, but the union movement is speaking for every single worker when we're campaigning that Australia needs a pay rise and we need to change the rules, you know?
So it's not working for individuals, though, who aren't members?
But that's not because of unions. That's because big business and major corporations have too much power. You know, they've contrived a situation where there's 40% of workers on insecure work with little or no rights, you know, that are laid off just before Christmas. What should be a special and a happy time of year for families is often ones where workers who are struggling are not making ends meet at that time. And until workers come together, until we fight to change the rules, until we get rid of a federal government that is enabling inequality to occur and zero wages growth to
happen. Okay, my political radar's gone up. You know, we know we can get that message across during, you know, certain arguments. But,
Dr. Di, impartial Di.
Here she is, yeah. Di Johnson with Griffith University.
Yeah,
and when you heard Shane there saying, yes, what savings, your ears pricked up.
And, well, because it's like any of these economic indicators, when we make sweeping generalisations across the population about, you know, particular figures without sort of looking into it, we miss some of the, you know, the nuance for different people. So, for instance, and if we take a dive into savings, which I know is a very shallow pool for a lot of people out there, we have, you know, still overall, younger people and those who are sort of over 55 generally tend to save more still. But it's those people in the middle ages, which is myself, you know, my 11 and 13-year-old are still going to need the same food and clothes and school fees and what have you. And so we perhaps are dipping into our savings for those non-discretionary spending items. But then we've also got, like I said before, those retirees who are purposely spending their savings because that's what they've been saving for in retirement. So, and that fairly massive demographic change is having an impact on indicators for the first time in a long time that perhaps isn't, will continue to unfold. And so savings will, of course, dip down, and that's part of what they intended them to do. I can see Jean's got something to say.
Yeah, oh, Jean Tunney, yeah. Director of Adept Economics.
I think the critical point is the point about inequality. So I think overall there is a lot of savings in the, you know, Australians have saved a lot, and the major way that Australians save is by buying a home and investing in the home. So people are paying off their
mortgage. That's another can of worms, Jean, isn't it?
But then you do have many people who are saving, and also we're accumulating money in our superannuation account. So I think it's a complete, you know, mischaracterisation to say that, oh, no one's got any savings. I think that's complete nonsense. And the stat that you used at the start, I mean, you're talking about the saving out of current income, so what's been earned in that quarter, and you're right, that was 1%, but that's a flow, not a stock, and so the overall...
What do you mean by that?
Well, by a flow, like what's coming out of the tap going into the bathtub, and the level of the bathtub, in the level of water in the bathtub is the stock. So, yeah, sure, in that quarter, overall...
But the plug's being pulled out regularly.
I think Jean's actually concurring with me, though. You know, that once we look at the segments, some people are still saving, but there are also other segments that really, for various reasons, aren't and can't.
Yes, so it's that issue. I think, you know, inequality is, you know, that's an issue we could discuss, and there are some people who are doing it tough. I don't deny that, but I think we shouldn't say that things are just bad all across Australia. I think that's wrong. I think things are generally pretty good.
The haves and the haves nots.
Okay. But. Well, in 20 minutes left on Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane, still need your calls coming in, 1300 222 612, listening to this discussion. I want to move on to some solutions, some ideas about how wages could actually go up. And everybody's putting their hands up here.
Yeah.
Craig Emerson, you're at a bit of a disadvantage being on the phone, so I'm going to go to you first. How fair am I?
You're very fair.
Thank you, Craig.
And great so egalitarian streak.
Talk trade, Craig. Talk trade.
Well, you could as a former trade minister. I would like to hear what could Australia do to see workers' wages going up?
I'll preface my remarks with this. There have been studies, a big study by the International Monetary Fund, about why this is not unique to Australia, this flat wages, stagnating wages. It's true in just about every advanced country. So what's going on? They said, oh, it's just the aftermath of this, you know, global financial crisis. In some countries, that's a bit of the explanation, but a much stronger explanation in other countries is that we do live in a global labour market now, enabled by the internet. So when people are competing for jobs, they're competing with not only other people in Australia, but all around the world. That's accentuated by the gig economy. And so what's happening is that even full-time workers are not asking for a wage rise because they're worried that their jobs will be contracted out. So we've already heard about labour hire firms. They may lose their jobs to, you know, China or India or Norway or wherever. So this is a big shift and it can't be changed. We're not going to unplug ourselves from the internet.
So what to
so
be done?
Any solutions have to be, you know, in recognition of this changed globalised labour market. However, another famous economist, Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winner, has recommended an increase in the US of the minimum wage. And he said he wishes the US had Australia's minimum wage. And I think there is a role for government to lift, you know, just for all the casuals, all the part-timers, lift the minimum wage. People say, oh, there'll be all this unemployment. They've been saying it for years and years and years. I'm not saying double it, but I think there is a legislative thing. And I also, and I think I'm probably going to, you know, anticipate what Ros McClellan says, there is an argument to strengthen the bargaining position of workers. That's not a left-wing view exclusively. Again, organisations such as the International Monetary Fund and the OECD think that that is what's been going on, the weakening of bargaining power for workers.
Because it used to be stronger, Craig?
Yeah, it used to be stronger. And it's true that there were more full-time jobs. Ros has given the figure on casualisation. But there is a role for government in all this. And, you know, over more than 100 years since Federation, we have had government step in and change the rules and make them fairer. And at least then all the employers know what the rules are. At the moment, I worry that some employers say, well, if I do this, a good thing by my workers, will I be outcompeted by other businesses that don't do a good thing by my workers? Well, if you get them all in the one cart through a legislative measure, then that problem doesn't arise.
We'll go to Dan Petrie and Ros McLennan for a response to that. But while I've got former Trade Minister on the line, it'd be interesting to hear from Linda in Ormo. Linda, what did you want to put into this conversation?
Oh, I feel really embarrassed listening to people that are so knowledgeable about the world scheme. But I just wanted to say that I'm just approaching 80, and when I left school and looked for a job, I could apply. I was a dressmaker and had done a little bit of domestic science at school, and my mother taught me a lot about it. She was a dressmaker and so was my grandma. And anyway, I could look in the Courier Mail in the morning, Telegraph in the afternoon, apply for 6 jobs in this paper and 6 in that paper, and by night time I'd have 12 phone calls and I could have any job I chose.
Well, you're probably really good, Linda.
In the 50s and 60s. And then all of a sudden, they decided to drop the tariffs and we started to import cheap, which is good because that kept those people over there in jobs. But then, by the time a decade had passed, we'd lost our shirt-making industry. Palaco went off. Friedman suits went overseas. All our dressmaking stopped. You know, we could buy good shoes anywhere. Our footwear industry just disappeared. And now we're at the stage where all Australia's got to export is minerals and coal, which is a no-no, and then our food. We can supply food. And what we can't supply food because we're the driest nation on earth. We've got not enough water to produce to support our own farmers, and something's gone wrong.
Very informed questions and points there you're making, Linda.
And I can see that happened in the last 50 years.
Well, Craig Emerson...
I don't know what's going to happen in the next 50 years.
Yes. Well, let's ask Craig Emerson there. As a former Labor government trade minister, you're hearing the raw end, I guess, there of trade liberalisation. And across the world, we are at the moment witnessing a real push against that. Do you take that on board, think that we have gone too far?
No, I don't. And, you know, I'm not going to beat around the bush. If we had the same sort of tariffs on textiles, clothing and footwear that we had in the mid-1980s, it more than doubles the price, probably treble the price of those. Now, we also, we're talking
so about... So $80 for a Bonds T-shirt, not that
well,
I shouldn't mention brands,
but
right?
But it's a lot dearer, right? Now, we've just been talking about the cost of living. And poor people in particular, they still need school shoes for their kids and shirts and so on, undies and socks. Do we really want them to be paying double or treble the price? So I actually think it's unfair. Leave the economics out of it. It's unfair to load up poor people with higher costs when we're actually complaining about the cost of living. Australia was okay in production of textiles, clothing and footwear. In this globalised economy, we're not. There are so many countries that can produce it, you know, high quality and much cheaper. And for us to put up these big walls and say, no, we'll produce it here, but much more expensively, I don't think is actually fair to working people and poor people in particular.
Okay. I'm going to go to you, Dan Petrie, for like your headline response, because we've got calls coming in.
Sure.
So to that point that Craig made earlier around giving workers more power at the bargaining table... Mm. That would actually help improve the situation. Would you be open to that?
Which workers are we talking about? The small business owners who earn less than the minimum wage, or are we talking about workers themselves? We need... Talking about wage increases is one thing, but you also need to lift the burden of small business. That headline tax rate, the corporate tax rate, as unpopular as it is and as easy it is to bash banks with it, the simple fact is... Accelerate that to 25%, get it going.
Businesses have had a tax cut, though, in the last year.
They've had a tax cut. But the thing is, it's a headline tax cut. And the thing is, you know, what we've been asking for is a further acceleration instead of being a 10-year time frame.
So if you get that tax cut, will you give workers more money, though? That's been the argument around it.
The majority of small businesses are not these kind of, you know, pinstripe-wearing folks such as myself.
Dan.
But they're basically two people shops.
Okay. Ros McLennan, now you would be arguing for more power for workers at the bargaining table, but we have seen the downside of that before as well. So is there a sweet spot?
Well, we're seeing the downside of it now because we've got a situation where inequality is at a 70-year high. We've got the top 1% of Australians owning more wealth than the bottom 70% combined. And we've got 82% of people in a recent ACTU survey saying slow wages growth is front of their mind in terms of being an election issue. But we can do something about it. Well, I give you my list.
Well, I think the headline. We need to get to Anne in New Farm.
Well, we need to increase the minimum wage so workers have got enough to support themselves and their families.
That goes up every year, doesn't it?
It is crawling along at snail's pace. Real wage growth is now 0%, so inflation is outstripping it. Buying power is outstripping it. And if workers don't have bucks in their pockets, they can't spend it in Dan's small businesses. So that's a shared issue.
Ticket,
and then the GDP won't go up. Let's listen to Anne. Anne in New Farm. Where did you want to take us today in this discussion?
The wording of this segment was that wages haven't gone up, but don't they go up on the 1st of July every year? So they actually do go up.
They went up 3.5%.
Sort of seems to be a bit inflammatory, saying wages don't go up, but I don't...
Real wages.
Yeah.
Real wages. So in terms of against... Anne?
Throughout the commentary, you said wages don't go up, but... they do actually go up.
Let's listen to Jean Tunney.
Oh, yes. It's
economist.
So it's... when you adjust for the purchasing power, so you're getting paid more in dollar terms, so you are getting more dollars, but because the prices of goods and services have gone up, and particularly electricity, that's been one of the major costs, and that's gone up. So utilities costs,
rent, petrol,
yes, right, and yeah, quite
isn't
the
it just
variety.
Housing, the well, basics, well,
yes, exactly. But then there are some that have been going down. So audiovisual equipment has,
if you can
has
afford
gone,
it.
Well, yes. Well, many people are buying those goods and services. So look, there's a mixture of things, but so it's because prices are generally going up, but there's different stories for different types of goods and services.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Anne?
Well, it's clarify wages do actually go up rather than, like, is it wages, you're saying wages do go up, but real wages.
So yeah, what you can buy.
Prices are going up as well. So, and if the prices are going up at the same rate that wages are going up, then you're not getting anything more in real terms. That's what we're saying, yes.
So maybe, I don't know, we should be saying the purchasing power? I don't know.
Well, it's still real wages growth is 0%. You know, the cost of things goes up, and the Australian Council of Trade Unions argues for minimum wage workers, you know, the minimum wage to go up, thankfully.
I want to hear from Linda on the Sunshine Coast. Linda, what can you share with us about your personal experience?
Yes, on entitlements for casuals, when people generally talk about casuals not entitled to any entitlements, but annual leave, we're talking about casuals that are really, the situation should be that they're employed for 6 months or 12 months.
And are you a casual employee, Linda, or are you an employer?
No, I've been a payroll officer for 40 years.
So you're talking
about. What I'm saying is that a lot of employers employ casuals for 5 or more years. They are entitled to annual leave based on the total number of hours they work.
And if they ask for it, what's likely to happen?
Hey?
There was a ruling about this recently.
Dan Petrie,
There was a ruling on this recently. A Rio Tinto truck driver who had been employed through a labour hire company on a casual basis but had been working full-time hours was being have adjudged to have been receiving annual entitlements.
Right.
Because for all intents and purposes, he was fulfilling that role in the full-time capacity but was being... But, again, it's the minutiae of the law. You can't... If you're working 10 hours a week, it's different again. So.
And so, yes, Linda, have you had people at the company that you work actually put this into practice?
Yes.
And they got their annual leave?
Yes, recently.
That's a great thing to know. Thank you so much for calling. We've got about 5 minutes left on Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. Die. I know, it always goes so quickly in the end, doesn't it? Roz, does everybody need an industrial lawyer on their side?
No, they need a union.
But what we're hearing today is that union fees are too expensive for a lot of workers to actually afford. So what does the union movement need to do to better represent people?
I don't think it's union fees that are too expensive. I think it's wages that are too low. And unfortunately, until workers build power to change the rules so that the minimum wage increases, so that workers can get together to bargain across industries and sectors, so that we can turn the tide on insecure work.
Who pays for these wages? It's a small business.
Well, how are small business people going to make a buck if workers are living from hand to mouth and people have got less than full-time employment? How are they going to get a wage to spend at your place?
We can get the union versus the business leaders discussion many places. Craig Emerson, I can hear you, Craig Emerson, as well, chiming in there about that recent legal change there. But I mean, what do you think about the power of workers then, if you've got to get through the minutiae of the law to actually get your entitlements?
Well, I'm going to agree with Roz because people will not go through industrial lawyers. I mean, if union fees are too high, imagine the cost of going to a lawyer.
They are too high, aren't they?
No, I don't think so.
Heard our mate in Darra earlier talking about how he can't afford the union fees, and yes, you said he doesn't earn enough to pay tax, so they're not. It's no worth being tax deductible anyway.
Well, he said he can't afford the union fees, but he also said that people have to, tell employees, warn them three times. I mean, he might be right, he might be wrong, but I don't believe that union fees are too high.
Okay, there's a song about being right and wrong, isn't there?
Potentially a good investment.
Okay.
Potentially a good investment.
Dyer Johnson, yeah. Back to that question about how do we get wages back on the up?
Well,
we've heard about perhaps, more power to the workers.
Yeah.
What idea do you have?
Well, I mean, when you look at some economic theories, you know, if you look for areas that are perhaps underemployed or underpaid, and perhaps, you know, even on a bit of a lighter note, I think if, say, by Christmas we try and close the gender pay gap, I mean, women make up... Yeah, we have
another
we make
can
up
of worms.
80% of household spending. We make up 80% of household spending, so that drives consumption. And, you know, there's underutilization of a resource there. And
is there an idea to actually get wages back up?
Yes, well, start by doing an audit of where across the organisation they're low. Editor of a journal where we've got a paper where they've gone through some really practical ways that organisations can look at conscious and unconscious bias across all of these processes and, you know, how to bring some parity.
Okay, there. Bring women's wages up. Dan Petrie, the business side. Mm-hmm. What do you want to bring wages up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and so how do we do it?
Okay, first thing, you remove the red tape burden.
And what's a practical, like tangible example
okay,
of that?
Okay, so like for example, compliance costs for state and federal, harmonising it across departments, looking at, for example, accelerating the tax write-off, which has now been made permanent, ensuring, for example, that small business has access to government contracts. Many don't. And and creating and empowering them to do so. Like, remember, this is a confidence game. And our elected officials, but it doesn't matter what political divide they're on, it is about confidence.
Okay. And if you're a worker as well, remember that. It's a confidence game, I guess, too.
Yeah, good things are happening. Exports, very strong.
Gene Tunney.
Yes. Well, I think in the short run, there's a risk of doing things that can end up costing jobs. So putting up minimum wages, for example. In the long run, wages depend on productivity of the workers, so therefore we should be looking at our education and training systems and ensuring that we're educating people and training them for the new economy, training them for those opportunities that exist. So that's where we need to focus, in my view.
The new economy. Look, let's leave the last word to Laura in Manly. Laura, what did you want to tell us in this discussion today?
I'm a casualised workforce person, so I'm in aged care looking after people in their own homes, and there's only casual at my job. I had a pay rise of a whole dollar, which was great, but I'm still...
Over what time?
I've been with them for 3 years, so I think I got a pay rise of 50 cents a year ago and a dollar, so it has gone up, but I'm still only getting 16 hours a week if I'm lucky. So I'm underutilised. I could work as many as you want, but unable to get full-time in that position.
And is that the field that you want to work in and continue working in?
Yeah, I studied to become an AIN. And
what's an AIN?
Assistant in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
So we look after anyone, do baths, showers, take you shopping, clean, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, Dan Petrie's saying send you a note. What about? Do you need help?
Well, no. My mother-in-law's in care, and it's an industry I do know, and I do have a number of people I can talk to on Laura's behalf.
There you go. Laura?
Oh, that'd be great. And I am a part of a union. I asked them for help to increase my wage or hours.
See?
And they said
Ros
they
and I are working together.
And what happened, Laura?
They couldn't help me because I'm casual. They said if you were part-time or full-time, we could talk on your behalf, but as I'm casual, they couldn't help me.
This really is about power. You know, Laura's situation, which is a really typical situation. There's heaps of people on casual work. They feel that they don't have the power to negotiate to increase their wages without fear of either their hours cut or getting the sack. And, yeah, that is a terrible situation.
Okay, well, I don't think we've put the lid on any of the cans of worms that we opened today. But Ros McLennan from the Queensland Council of Trade Unions, Di Johnson from Griffith Uni, Craig Emerson, economist and former Labor government minister, Dan Petrie from the Chamber of Commerce and Industry Queensland, and Jean Tunney, Director of Adept Economics. Thank you so much for talking with us about this today.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your calls and texts. I'll be back with you on Monday.
Hi, I'm Kat Feeney. This afternoon from 2, Paul Kelly plays Brisbane live in the studio. I'm gonna go with the one I love. That's on Afternoons from 2 p.m. on ABC